Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Well, you know what, beautiful listeners, I just want to first say we appreciate you listening so much. And we've heard from some of you, and it's just such an encouragement because these women are clearly, their lives have been used by God, blessed by God, and they're ordinary. It puts us all in the same category that God can do amazing things. This is part two of Olga Robertson, and Cheryl just astounded me with Olga's background, with her father, who was rough around the edges.
A darling, and Lebanese.
And Lebanese, and her wonderful, darling, sweet mother, who was also from the Middle East, and that there they were living in the Philippines when Olga was born with her four or five brothers and sisters.
Two brothers and two sisters. Right. Well, but, one passed away.
Right. Mm-hmm. Five children altogether.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they were in the Philippines during World War II when the Japanese invaded. And what a horrible time they had fleeing, living in rice paddies. There was an opportunity in that for Olga when she met some American GIs who were chewing gum, and that's how she knew they were on the good side, which is so funny. But that she was able, with her perfect English and her ability to type that she received training for, she could get a job. And by helping out, then this, Cheryl's going to summarize for us how it moved from there. But here, when we pick up today, we're basically going to see Olga now with these two daughters on her own doing, she's come to the Lord and she's doing the work of evangelism in the Philippines. And the Lord's made it clear, your ministry will be to men.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk a little bit about some of the hardships so far. Mm-hmm. So we've got World War II, but that letter to gratitude for the Americans, which would be, you know, part of her ministry, how she would, you know, take typing and work on the base, which would lead to two daughters who her husband abandoned her. But these two daughters became such a blessing in her life, always these twins. From the heartache of the Americans pulling out of the Philippines so that she needed a job. So she was working at different places at a pay cut, but that helped her to notice this smiling American couple with the Foursquare Church where she went and she received the Lord, and then she worked for them. And when that job closed, the Lord was able to make her an evangelist through a correspondence that she made with Bob Pierce of World Vision. So when we last had our story, we were talking about her evangelism and how she was being supported by World Vision. So she's got this house where she lives upstairs, and these young students are coming to the downstairs and being evangelized. And
100 at a time.
Right.
All these men from the large high school just show up.
Growing in the Lord. Well, there had been an evangelist, a woman evangelist, who had come to the Foursquare Church. And Olga had loved this evangelist and her husband. And they had gone from Manila to Davao. And while they were there, they had another ministry. But they had led these 30 prisoners, these 30 convicts to the Lord, these Philippine men to the Lord. And the evangelist and her husband were really concerned about them because they were being transferred to Bilibid prison in the Philippines.
The worst of the worst.
It was notorious. Yep. They had over 6,000, sometimes 9,000 crowded into this space. Oh. And they were like dangerous.
Hardcore
prisoners. And so the evangelist said to Olga, can you go visit these men? Well, I mean, can you find someone to visit these men? And Olga asked everyone and anyone, will you please go and will you visit, you know, these 30 inmates who are Christians now, and they need, you know, we need to check on their welfare. And everybody turned her down.
Mm.
Everybody. Finally, this pastor said, I'll show you how to get there, but I won't go in with you. And so Olga
prayed to how dangerous it was,
isn't it? So Olga decided she had to go on her own. So she went, and this pastor, you know, took her there, escorted her there. It took two buses. It took 2 hours, two different buses, then a crowded Jeep, and finally a horse horse-drawn carriage. And add to that, that the whole time that she was traveling, there were children and wives of these prisoners that were also with her. And they not only had food and tobacco and supplies, they also had squealing pigs. They were taking live pigs to their husband in the prison. So when she got there, Bilibid, it looks like, I've seen a picture of it, it looks like a castle. It's got these like white walls and these huge gates. I mean, it literally looks like the land of no return.
Wow.
And so, you know, you go through these huge iron gates, you know, to this dangerous place. And this pastor's like, you know, I'll see you going in. So she, you know, goes up to get entrance. And they said, you know, who are you? And so she explains, look, I'm just checking on these prisoners who have come from Davao. I'm doing it for, you know, this evangelist and her husband. And by a miracle and the favor of the Lord, they let her in. And but they said this to her, we'll let you meet with them in our barber shop, you know, inside the prison, but no proselytizing. You're not allowed to lead them to Jesus. So she's.
But I think I should add at this point that when you described, and you've met her, but when you described how she looked, especially in that time of her life when she's doing this, she's tall, she's
probably 110 pounds and probably about 5'7".
And beautiful.
Beautiful.
With her Lebanese background.
Mm-hmm. And dark hair.
And what
right.
was her mother?
Her mother was Syrian.
Syrian.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of exotic for the Philippines.
Yes.
And so
beauty.
Tall
yes.
and so stunning. And for a woman like that to walk into the
yes.
prison and say, this is why I'm here. It took me
exactly.
hours and hours to get here.
Exactly.
It's just
right.
unheard of.
Right. So
amazing.
Those 30 men came to hear her and to meet with her at the barbershop, but 100 more joined. Now, these 100 men came because these men from Davao, when they came, they began evangelizing right away and telling them about Jesus. So these other 100 men are curious.
Yeah.
They want to hear about
What's
the Lord.
Yeah.
So they asked, you know, Olga all these questions, and she gave them a Bible study, and they said, please come back. So she waited like 2 days, and she came back. And she was going there to Davao 3 to 4 days a week, that two-hour
goodness.
Travel. And remember, she's leaving two girls to do this and to come back. So Olga kept coming. She was finally given a larger room. But it's important to say that the guards were really hard on her in the beginning. At first, they would delay her, say, well, we're not sure you've got the proper papers. And they would change the location of where she was going to meet the men. The guards were really upset that anyone was seeking the welfare of these notorious prisoners. I mean, they were didn't like these prisoners too much either. And later, as we keep going, you'll find out why. But the more she kept coming, the more the guards began to warm up to her. So of those 100 men that came, you know, most of them got saved, and they decided, you know, they grabbed other men who also got saved. They decided to form a choir, a men's choir in the prison. And one of their favorite songs is, there is power, power, wonder-working power in the blood of the Lamb. And the other favorite song was The Old Rugged Cross.
Oh.
And they loved to sing these songs. Well, when they held their first baptism, the 30 from Davao were baptized, as well as 67 members of that choir. And they were baptized. By this time, she was able to talk to Pastor Reverend Alan Hamilton, accompanying Olga. Again, she's finding Americans to come in with her. So they also told Olga that they could not be responsible for her safety. She had to sign a waiver that if something happened to her, that was her, you know, like, sorry, but you went in, you took this a chance, so we're not responsible for your life. In 1958, there were men on death row because of the brutal killing of a guard in a prison uprising. It was so brutal. And what they did to this man and how they treated his corpse even was so, so brutal that you could understand why there was so much animosity by these guards for Olga going in. So then Olga went up and said, I want to see these men. And they said, are you kidding? Do you know what these men have done? Yeah. How brutal they were to a guard. You think you're safe? She said this, sir, this is the time the men need to hear the gospel so they'll know that Jesus will forgive them. So the troublemakers were brought to Olga in their shackles. And one of the men asked Olga if she would pray the rosary over him and for him. And she said, no, but I will teach you how to pray directly to Jesus. And that's exactly what she did. So this is in the first 9 months of her going to this prison that all of this happens. I mean, you would think that that uprising was enough to put her off. But no, she wanted to meet those men who were headed for death row. 9 months after her first initial time of going to Bilibid, there was a second baptism and over 80 men were baptized. So Olga brought Kitty and Kate, her twins, with her a few times to sing duets, and they melted the men's hearts. However, Olga felt this sense in her spirit that that was not such a good idea and it wasn't safe. At one time, and this is what I want to stress, is Olga was never safe. It was not a safe thing to do what Olga was doing. And, you know, these men, even after they had gotten saved, I mean, she talks in the book, The Men in My Life, which is the story of her ministry into these prisons. She talked about how these men, some of them would backslide and they would try to escape, or they would beat up a guard, or they would kill somebody else in prison. They were never safe. And so one time she's holding a meeting and her translator steals her wallet. And the guards realize what happens and they want to, you know, check all of these men and find her wallet. And she begs them not to, because she knows the man on whom that wallet is found will go to death row. And so she begs the guards not to. And she knows who it is. She knows it's her interpreter. She knows exactly who it is. So he feigns like helping her, you know, I will find this man for you. So finally she says to him, you don't need to look for him unless you want to look in the mirror, because it's you. You're the one who did this. But I forgive you because of Jesus. And I wouldn't let these guards touch you because of Jesus. But you need to seek the forgiveness of the Lord, because this is not a good thing to do. And later that day, her wallet was found. Everything in it was gone, but the wallet itself was found. And I forgot to mention this. He stole it while they were praying. I mean, talk about not safe.
Everyone has their head bowed and their eyes closed. Here's my chance.
So Bob Pierce, hearing about what Olga was doing, and after a few years, he said, Olga, you need a furlough. I want to bring you to the United States. And I've got this wonderful couple. They live on the Hudson River in New Jersey and New York, sorry. And they'll take you in and your daughters can have a wonderful time. And so Olga and her daughters, they sailed by freighter to San Francisco, went across. She was able to see a sister in San Francisco. That was good. Then they took the train all the way across, a 3-day, 3-night journey all the way to the East Coast, meet this couple. They're just so excited. They pick them up at the train station. They get there. And the woman has a few rules, but it's not very, you know, bad. And the husband just loves the girls. And she knows that this couple has children, but the children never come over. They don't seem to have any friends. And within about 2 weeks, this woman begins to show some unstable behavior, begins to scream at the girls. Aww. In fact, at one time, she threatens the girls that she's going to kill them and threatens to hurt them. So Olga has to get out of there. She goes to another house. A pop arranges for her. But at this house, they have a teenage boy who's kind of not safe for her girls. So she ends up... she doesn't know exactly what to do, but she goes to a Bible study, a church, where Gladys Aylward is speaking. And we've talked about Gladys Aylward, her testimony. She was an English parlor maid who became a missionary to China. God used her extraordinarily. Mm-hmm. And if you go to the very beginning of this podcast, Jasmine tells the story of Gladys Aylward. It's also in a book called The Small Woman or The Little Woman. Both books are about Gladys Aylward. Or
the movie.
Yes.
Which is
just so, I don't even mention the movie, The End of Sixth Happiness with Olga with Ingrid Bergman, who was 5'8". And Gladys Aylward was not even tiny, 5 feet tall.
Right.
It just miscasting all the way around. And they tried to make it a romance, which was not.
Oh, movies. They're never like
yes,
a book.
Well, you should know.
That's true.
But anyway, her story is also told in A London Sparrow.
There you go.
Which is by Phyllis Thompson.
Mm-hmm. And I just love that these two women got to meet across the world from their just. The circumstances were ordained by God so that this meeting would happen.
Right,
because
even though it was difficult.
Friends
they did.
The rest of
In
their
fact,
life.
She even went to Singapore to visit with her. They spent time together. And at one point, she said that Gladys gave her the best lesson of her life. Gladys pointed to her Bible and said, "This is my library. I just preach the word as it is." And because, you know, Olga was feeling like, do I need more seminary? Yes. Do I need more education?
Mm-hmm.
Because she was at this time, she was beginning to disciple these men.
Mm.
And she did it through these correspondence courses. And when the men would graduate, finish the correspondence course, she would give them a graduation certificate. Well, the men begin to ask Olga, we need our wives to know this truth. We need our children to know these truths. So she expanded her prison ministry to go into a place called Tondo, one of the most impoverished and dangerous parts of Manila. But she went there because of the men.
Mm.
They had said, we want our wives and children to be safe. So she went there. And this Christian woman said, I have a house there. I will let you use my house for evangelistic purposes. And that's exactly what she did. In 1965, that's when she returned to the, I forgot to say, she returned after that furlough. And the only good thing about that furlough was meeting Gladys Aylward.
Yep.
It was very dangerous, except for the girls, her daughters actually loved California and said, we're going to come back here for college, which they did. In 1965, Corey Ten Boom, who had become a friend of Olga's, came to the Philippines to see Olga. Now, these two women met at a Billy Graham crusade.
Mm-hmm.
They were both chosen and invited to Berlin to speak as evangelists. Billy had 8 female evangelists speaking at the event in Berlin. And one of them was Corrie Ten Boom and another one was Olga. And they met and became very, very close friends.
Don't you love that?
I do.
I do.
So Corrie wants to speak at Billabed. You know, she was a prisoner, so she wanted to speak. And so she goes to Billabit. But
didn't Corey write about it in Tramp for the Lord?
I'm not sure if it was Tramp for the Lord or if it was a prisoner. What?
I'm not going to remember, but I do remember reading in one of her books.
She did. And she wrote about the trauma of going into this prison. Yes. When she saw it, it reminded her so much of Ravensbrück and her experience there. And especially when the iron doors closed behind her, she had a little bit of a panic attack, but she just leaned into the Lord.
Mm.
They had an incredible time with these men. They were very responsive. And Olga, of course, was the, you know, part of the translation. They would have interpreters too, because there are a lot of different dialects in the Philippines. There's not just one, there's one general language, but there's all these different dialects. So anyway, the men loved Corey. Many came forward. So they went to go the next day, but there had been a riot, another dangerous uprising, and they wouldn't let the women in. And so they prayed, because as much as Corrie Ten Boom had had that panic attack, she felt like the Lord was telling her she was supposed to go back. So they prayed and they prayed. And by a miracle, the Lord opened the doors and Corrie was able to teach there 2 more days and minister in this prison. So at 60, one of the men came to Olga and said, Olga, I want you to adopt my son. Now, Olga is 60 years old, and he says, I want you to adopt. My wife is going to have a little boy. She's not a very good woman. I don't think she should be raising our son. I already talked to her, and she's willing to give you our little boy. So Olga takes this little boy, but she realizes he doesn't look a thing like the father. And this is one of the reasons. But she adopts him, names him Shalom, and he becomes just a wonderful young man and works with her and favorite little brother of her daughters. Well, many guards came to Jesus because of the testimony and transformation of these convicts. Olga ministered for over 60 years to the men in Bilibid prison.
60 years. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Just amazing.
But at one point, and you know, again, this is never safe. At one point, well, my dad went down in 1978 and
to the Philippines.
Yes, and went to Bilibid prison and spoke, and Olga was his translator, and, you know, it was really great. So the next day, the very next day, she's taking this other couple in with another man. It's Pastor Steve Riggles and his wife, Becky, and they go into this prison, and they're ministering, and they go to leave, and all of a sudden, there's these four men that rush at them, and they've got these knives that they've carved out of, you know, whatever, shivs, and they're holding it to their neck, and they move Olga and the one man and
the Riggles
into Olga's van, and they order her to drive, and the one holds a knife to Olga's stomach, and she said, she waves his hand away. She actually hits the sand. These are dangerous men. She said, get that thing out of my stomach. I cannot drive with you holding that to my stomach. And he orders her to crash through the iron gates. So she hits them, and the car bounces back. And she said, my car will not make it through those iron gates. And so they're ordering that. They're getting more, you know, nervous, the convicts. And so anyway, Olga sees this guard and he motions her to jump out of the car. So she hits the gate, jumps out of the car, and her assailant jumps after her, ready to kill her, and he's shot. Then the bigger guy who's with them, he turns on his assailant inside the van and overcomes him and is holding him down by sitting on top of him. In the meantime, the guards charge the van and they start shooting, and they shoot Becky three times. And the one assailant, he stabs Steve twice, but Steve is not that injured. So Steve and Becky end up going to the hospital. They're treated for their wounds. And then they say to Olga the next day, they said, take us back. Take us back. And so they go back in because Steve wants them to see that he's not afraid and God is stronger and Jesus is stronger.
Wow.
There are so many stories I could tell from the head of a gang called Batman. There were 15 different big gangs in the prison. And the head of Batman, I just love that name because it's the name of my grandson's cat. He got saved and he led the majority of his gang to Jesus. There were other men who were released and became pastors. And I wanted to tell one story that I didn't get the chance before I finished, but there were these young men on death row, and they seemed to be listening but not listening. And one gave his life, but there was one that just seemed resilient to the gospel. And she just said, Lord, you know, I've told him. And she would go there to pray as these men were on the electric chair and as the lever was, you know, moved. And so she was there. And this one young man who had seemed resilient, he's on the chair. The executor's hand is on the lever to pull it down when all of a sudden this man yells out, I belong to Jesus Christ. No man can take my life from me because I gave it to him.
Wow.
And the lever goes, and he goes into the presence of the Lord. And Olga said that everyone watching was just absolutely stunned by the glory of the moment. So Olga, in the book, and you might want to get the book even though it's out of print, it's $30 on Amazon. I had a friend that still had it, but and I know I have a copy. I just had to find it. But
and the title of the book
is "The Men in My Life."
The Men in My Life, right. Seems to fit,
right? It does, doesn't it? So when she would leave Bilibid, whenever she was walking in dark or dangerous areas, all of a sudden she'd find these men walking beside her, and they said, "Got saved by you in prison. You know, we're here for you." And every place she went, there were escorts. Another time she would get on a bus, and more often than not, the bus driver refused to let her pay because he would roll up his arms and show tattoos from being at Bilibid. Olga's daughters had moved to California after their college education. And when Olga succumbed to cancer, her daughters insisted that she live with them. Olga went to be with Jesus on July 7th in 2014. And I can only imagine how many of her former death row converts were there cheering her homecoming.
Amen. Woo.
Isn't that amazing?
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at WWK@CCCM.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.